Welcome back, everyone, to BoxBox Podcast. And today we bring you a very, very special episode because this is actually the first time we've ever had a guest on BoxBox. And we bring to you full-time formula. It is Brandon, the man who is going to every single F1 race this season on a £20,000 budget. It is impressive. So, mate, thank you very much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me. This is awesome. It's one of my only times being on a podcast so far since I've started the challenge. So thanks for inviting me on.
No worries. I mean, I know you and Matt have been speaking for a long time, and Matt has been keen to get you on. And I mean, we've been following your journey. It's sick. And we want to hear all about it. But before we do that, we do just want to introduce ourselves. We are BoxBox Podcast, powered by BoxBox Club. If you do want a 30% discount off an Ultra subscription for the finest F1 widgets app on the market, then do use code BoxBoxPod. It is free. If you just want to try it out, it is absolutely free on the App Store and the Android Store. But if you do want an Ultra subscription, you can get 30% off with code BoxBox. If you do want to get involved, then do make sure you follow us on social media. Just search BoxBoxPod and we will come up on TikTok and Instagram. If you do want to follow Brandon, let us know the handles.
Oh, sorry, me. Yeah, full-time formula. So it's at full.time.formula on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube.
So make sure you do that. Wherever you're listening to us, give us a 5-star rating because it really does help out the pod. And we appreciate it massively. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you click subscribe if you're new and comment down below if you hate everything we say, like most of you normally do. Anyway, let's crack on with the show.
All right, guys. So, yeah, as Luke said, our first ever guest. And we've been doing this podcast now for 4 years.
Yeah, way too long.
expiry date is obviously coming up, but way too long. But finally, we've got a guest on. And yeah, Brandon, we spoke back in, when was Saudi? That was March, April time?
I'd have been April, yeah. April, yeah. Saudi.
And I saw your clips going around, you know, this guy's decided to, you know, go on a budget of £20,000 and travel to every race this year. And I was like, that sounds actually quite a sick idea. So my first question to you is why and why did you come up with a budget of £20,000 and what, you know, led you to doing this?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess from the start, like, I fell in love with F1 when I was a kid. So I was like 2-3 years old. My dad loved F1, got me into F1. So growing up, Michael Schumacher was my hero in the red Ferrari out front. I was dressed up in his like overalls. I'd play with his cars all day. Like, he was basically, like, I know a lot of kids sort of have David Beckham and other sort of heroes like that, whereas Schumacher was always my sort of hero growing up. And then into my teenage years, I always thought it'd be awesome to be able to go to every single race in the season. Never actually thought that I would try and do it until I was retired or if I became ridiculously rich or something along them lines. But then last year, it was probably August, September time, I just thought, would it actually be possible if I, because I didn't want to leave my job, so I was like, would it be possible if I worked out and used all of my holiday, used a massive chunk of my savings and actually do it all next year? So I spent a good like week or two deliberating, working it all out, and then thought, if I don't do it now, then maybe I'll never do it. Because, like, I'll be honest, right now in my life, I'm in my late 20s and I don't have like a huge number of responsibilities other than sort of for myself. So I thought, now's the perfect time. Otherwise, you know, life sort of passes you by, doesn't it? And then you realize, oh, I won't get the chance again. So so I started it, and yeah, it's been absolutely unreal, to be honest. So much better than I could have ever imagined so far. That's mainly thanks to the support I've got on TikTok and other social platforms. So yeah, it's been an unreal year.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You've gained quite a lot of followers on TikTok. You've got like 57k, is it?
Yeah, I think it's around 55-ish at the moment. Yeah, which is like mind-blowing. I remember saying to my colleague at work when I first started it, I started the account in February, and I said when I first started the account to him, I was like, oh, I'd love to be able to hit 10,000 followers by the end of the year. And I'd hit that before the first race. And I was like, that's like blows my mind. I'm like, that is crazy. I never realized that people would sort of be so invested and sort of, I guess, enjoy the challenge as much as I've been. Mm. So now it's blown me away, to be honest.
Well, I think it's like, it's such a unique thing to do, isn't it? It's not a, you know, I would love to go to every race. You know, it's like you say, it's a dream growing up. You go to all these tracks. But I think the reason why people get on board with it is because it is so unique. It is a, the fact that you put a budget into it and, you know, you've got an annual leave budget as well. And people get on board with that because people want to see you achieve it. And, you know, some people want to, you know, see, can he do it in this, you know, and it's just an exciting idea. And what was your, when you first started this off, was there like a goal? You know, I know you said about 10,000 followers, but was there a specific goal you had come the end of the year that you wanted to achieve? I mean, is this something that you want to continue doing Formula One content post this?
Yeah, I mean, like the 10,000 follower thing, I wouldn't say it was necessarily a goal, but I just thought I'd set myself a bit of a target. The main goal really was just to like enjoy every race. I've always enjoyed making, I used to be quite into photography, so sort of having that creative element in my life. My job isn't that creative. I work in data, so it's like quite numbers orientated. And I like the sort of creative side of stuff. I've never really made videos before, to be honest, but since I started in February, I've absolutely loved making them. And I want to carry on making them after this year. I've got quite a few ideas, not sure what next year would look like yet. I'm just trying to like basically enjoy the final 10 races as they come and then see what happens after that, to be honest. But I'd love to carry on into the future, yeah.
Every F1 race on a £10,000 budget.
Yeah,
it just gets exactly lower and lower.
Impossible. Impossible. Unless some sponsors want to help out with that. But yeah.
that was actually going to be my question. Like, you've obviously set this £20,000 budget, and you touched on it, Matt, of like, the reason I think it's so exciting is you've got all these kind of, you've got kind of all these Jeopardy elements. Like, I've got a £20,000 budget. I've got work. If you're just an influencer and you're like, I'm rich, I can do what I like, therefore I'm going to every single race, it becomes so much less exciting.
Yeah.
But
yeah, yeah.
What budget could someone genuinely do this on? If I was like, Brandon, I want to go to every single F1 race this next season, but I haven't got a lot of money. What's the most amount of money I need, but like the minimum at the same time? Like,
I think that, I mean, I'm on course to be very close to 20k. I don't know if I'm going to hit it exactly. It will be roughly around 20k come the end of the season. But I've also been doing it where I'm staying in hotel rooms. I'll be honest, I'm not a massive fan of like hostels or like sharing rooms. I don't know, I'm just a bit of a diva like that. So I just want my own room. So like if you're willing to stay in hostels and go general admission every race. And there's been some races as well where I've taken Ubers and things like that, which obviously add up. I honestly reckon that you could potentially do it for like 15 or 16 grand. But I'm trying to do it in a way where it's still comfortable, I guess, but also on the cheap side of things. So like the hotels I'm staying in are like 2-star hotels, nothing special. And some of them have been a bit ropey, I'll be honest. But like it's fine because you're only there for like 8 hours to sleep and then you just leave again and go to the F1. So... so I reckon that, but yeah, for my personal challenge, I'm not sure yet because of certain transport things and certain food and costs that I'm going to have at the races. But roughly the estimates I've made, I'm going to be very close to 20 grand. So hopefully I can hit it because that was the original aim. So,
and I suppose one of the only rules is that it has to be race day. It doesn't have to be qualifying. It doesn't have to be practice. It doesn't have to be the whole weekend. As long as it's the race, that's what you've achieved.
Exactly, yeah, yeah, yeah. So every single race day I'll be there. So some Grand Prix, it's just been Sunday. Most of them I've done Saturday and Sunday, and then there's been a few where I've managed to do Friday as well. Friday's a bit more challenging because a lot of the time I'll still be working, so I haven't attended many practice days. Exactly, that's another point, to be fair. Like, if you were to just go on Sunday every single weekend, then that would also make it slightly cheaper. Although the price difference between just Sunday tickets and a full 3-day ticket isn't actually massive, but it, I guess every little helps when you're trying to do it on such a small budget. So,
so what did you do when you went to Australia?
Australia, I flew out. I flew out on the Thursday night, so I had Friday off of work. I arrived in Australia Saturday. I went just on the Sunday. Then I had 2 days to sort of explore Melbourne, and then I flew to Shanghai on the Wednesday. So that week between Australia and China, I took a full week off of work. It's the only full week I've had off all year because it sort of made sense to link them trips, especially when you're going so far to Australia. So I was only in Australia for like 3.5 days and then flew back to China. Yeah, flew back to Shanghai and then Shanghai was one of the ones I had all 3 days. So I was there Friday, Saturday and Sunday, which was nice. And then flew back Sunday night and then Monday morning off of work. And then I was working again Monday afternoon and then through. So, yeah, that, it was quite nice to have a full week off, because then after that, it's been like some pretty crazy trips. And like, there's going to be some more crazy ones coming up later in the year for stuff like Brazil and Vegas, for example.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, like we've got to hear about all of this, because I want to go into, you know, I want to know, what are the F1 tracks that we should go to? If we're looking to go somewhere out of Silverstone, which, by the way, is super expensive anyway. If you go to Silverstone, that's like, for the weekend, it's, what, a £499 ticket. It's not the cheapest place either, no. You know, if you fancy a beer or some food.
It's not
known for being cost effective. But where would you recommend to someone listening right now, they want to go to an F1 race on a budget? Where's the best place?
On a budget, I would say my favorite so far has been Austria, purely because of the views and the views specifically from general admission. So because Austria's so undulating, when you walk up to turn three, at the top of turn three and that whole straight along to turn four is general admission spots. And because that's basically the top of the hill, you can see over so much of the track, and you can also see behind the track, which is just like incredible mountainscape. So I would say Austria on a budget. If you've got a bit more to spend, my favorite's probably been Japan so far. And the race in Japan was actually dreadful. So so not necessarily for the excitement of the race, but the event was awesome. Like, the fans are amazing over there. Like, everything everyone says about Japan being like a really cool country, I find is true. Yeah, being at like quite a historic track like Suzuka is just like a really cool thing for like an F1 nerd like myself. So they've been my two standouts probably so far. And it's funny because like, I review each race and I give them scores on my videos. And I think Japan's down in like 9th or 10th or something. But it's because I score it based on four different categories. So fan experience, food and drink, value for money, and then the race. So like, you could do really well in three of the categories, but if you have like a crap race like Japan did, I rated it really badly for the race, which then drops it down the rankings. So like, the reviews I give the races aren't necessarily based on my enjoyment, but they try and just give a perspective of like a few different categories of maybe what people would be interested in if they want to actually go to a race.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I went to Spa last year and I went on general admission. And I loved it. I loved the track. Spa's iconic anyway. The scenery around it. Have you found, because you've done a few races within grandstands, haven't you? And you've done a few general admissions.
Yeah.
Obviously, I know grandstands are great because you have your own seat. You can do that. You don't have to fight for spaces on, you know, like general admission. But is there one you prefer more than the other, general admission? Or would you say grandstand all day long?
I've done it based on the price difference between the two, really. So, for example, Silverstone, when I booked the Silverstone ticket, I did it almost as soon as they came out. And the difference between general admission and getting a grandstand was like £100. And I was like, for the sake of £100, I'd much rather be able to like explore all day and then just, like you say, go back to my assigned seat and not have to worry about trying to squeeze in somewhere. So I have based it on that. But also, I have experienced some quite different general admission spots this year. So like, for example, Canada general admission, because the circuit's so flat, is like so bad. Whereas like you say, Spa general admission, the circuit's massive, there's lots of different hills and vantage points that you can see see the track and the cars from. So so it sort of depends on both of them things. And I would honestly just choose depending on the track. Like, if I was to go back to Spa again, I'd probably just do general admission again. But Canada, for example, I would never do general admission again because you literally just can't see anything.
But you've had some pretty unreal experiences so far. Right? You know, you're only halfway through. I've seen that you've done quite a bit with Aston Martin. You've gone into, you've had pit lane passes, and you've done quite a few little things with Aston Martin, haven't you, this year?
Yeah, that's been unreal, to be honest. Like, as a sort of, like I said, like watching F1 all my life, like for that first time getting the paddock pass to go in and beat that sort of entry rotator or whatever it is, and walk through, Yeah, it was like such a surreal moment. It honestly felt like walking onto a bit of a movie set, because like we walked through and like the first thing I saw was the sky pad on the left, and there was Karun Chandhok doing his piece, and then to the right was like the sky crew getting ready to go live, and I was just like, this is like so weird and surreal, particularly in Saudi as well, because the paddock area in Saudi was quite empty. I think it's not necessarily like the most popular race for the paddock, so it was like you were just walking past like cameras and presenters everywhere. It really did feel like a movie set. But like you say, like Aston Martin have been incredible to me, to be honest. That was the first time they invited me to something, so I went in their garage in Saudi, and then the race after they were doing an event in Miami with Dom Dolla, the DJ, so they invited me to that on the Friday night, and then in Silverstone they invited me to the hospitality event on the Saturday, and that was like by far my favorite day of the year. Because I was able to take my dad with me, and yeah, that was like a real amazing moment to be able to actually share one of these experiences with him. And on that same day, Silverstone invited me into the paddock again. So that was the second time I went into the paddock, and that was with Silverstone separately. But also they said, you can bring your dad along. So to have that day with my dad in hospitality and going into the paddock was just unbelievable. And it's like that sort of thing I never expected to come from these videos. So yeah, it just makes me like so grateful for everyone following, to be honest, because that's what's enabled me to get these like experiences. And yeah, so surreal.
It is crazy. I mean, have you got anything crazy lined up looking forward? You've obviously done stuff with Aston Martin. Have you got anything planned looking ahead?
Nothing at the moment. Everything that's happened so far has been sort of on the week I've been messaged or emailed or told. So I think for a lot of the teams, they probably just focus on the race that's coming up. So then obviously, because there's quite small gaps between races, normally they then think, oh, this next race, oh, well, maybe we'll reach out now. So I've not actually got anything lined up at all. And to be honest, like if nothing else happened this year, then I wouldn't even mind, because like, I've had so many amazing experiences so far. Yeah, it's been incredible.
I think the thing is with these type of things, and you know, there's a YouTuber, isn't there, called Simon Wilson. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, I watch all his videos. He's great.
He's class, yeah, isn't he? And yeah, the one where he had to get from, I think, New Zealand, wasn't it, at the first McLaren factory, and he had to get to Monaco. And if he got to Monaco, he would have got paddock passes or something. Yeah. And the great thing is, and it kind of links in with what you're doing, it is very unique. There's not many people out there. And like Luke touched on earlier, if you have the money, then great. You can go to every race. You can do all of this stuff. But I think what people like is the challenge behind it. You know, for you, you work full time, you know, you've set yourself a budget, you've got annual leave. Although touching on the annual leave bit, you know, if you run out, are you just going to go to your boss and say, look, you've seen the challenge, I've been to Aston Martin as well, come on, let me have a few more days?
Yeah, sort me out. We have got an allowance of 5 unpaid days that I can take as well at my work, so if I need to use some of them, then I will. I'm actually going to do the final planning for that during the summer break. So by the end of the summer break, I will hopefully have a bit of a plan in my head with that. So yeah, if I need to, I'll just use some unpaid days, because with the 5 additional, then I can definitely do it. But hopefully it won't take all 5. Maybe if I do need some, it'll just be a couple. But I'll figure that all out in the next few weeks.
Yeah, because the European leg must be like pretty easy in comparison. Like when you had to fly to Australia, then stay there for a couple of days and head straight to Shanghai, like compare that to, you know, dotting about the European tracks, it's night and day, I imagine. But obviously, yeah, we're going to start heading away, and like you talk about heading to the States and Brazil, is that where you're thinking it could get a little bit hairy?
Yeah, that's where some of the trips get a bit stupid, to be honest. Like for example, Brazil, I've already booked my flights for that. I leave Friday night after work. Maybe Friday afternoon. And then I land in Brazil Saturday morning, go straight to the track from the airport, stay one night, go to the track again on Sunday, and then I'm flying back out Sunday night. So literally like one night in Brazil.
That is fucking mental. That is literally mental. Are you not, you're going to be... What's the time difference in Sao Paulo? They're probably like 5 hours behind?
Something like that. 4 or 5 hours, I think. I'm not actually sure. Yeah, something like
that. That's just going to be insane. Are you not just going to be cooked the whole weekend?
I mean, I think the adrenaline's just been like pumping me through. Honestly, I thought I'd be like more knackered than I actually am. Even after like the first lot of flyaways, like Japan, again, I was in Japan for like 3 days, I think. And some of them travel days were like 24 hours because I stopped in China, had like a 10-hour layover back again. So I thought stuff like that would, like, I don't know, have a bigger toll. But I think like just the adrenaline of doing it and making the videos and posting them all up just powered me through, to be honest. And it's funny because like you say, like the European ones are much easier on the annual leave because I can just do it in a weekend. But I find it so much harder on the video editing because obviously when you're flying further, I spend a lot of that travel time doing my editing for my videos. But when I'm in Europe, I just don't have any time when traveling to edit. So then I get back like super late on a Sunday night, for example, and then I'll probably just stay up for an extra few hours editing, wake up in the morning, log on to work, edit through lunchtime, go back to work again. So like the European leg's actually been pretty relentless in terms of like the logistics of getting videos out. But obviously, like you say, it's been a lot easier on the two budgets. Yeah, particularly money as well, because like the flights have been so much more expensive long haul.
Sorry, Luke.
No, I was just going to say that's probably where most of the spend has gone, I imagined, for like the long haul flights to Australia. Obviously, China was probably cheaper from Australia than it would have been from the UK.
Yeah, I actually got an all right deal with, because I linked the two together. I stopped in China on the way to Australia and obviously went back. So it was like four flights. I got them, I can't remember exactly what it was now. It was roughly a grand, which I actually thought was all right to tick off two Grand Prix. So sort of in my head made it £500 per Grand Prix. Obviously it doesn't quite work like that, because if you want to go to Australia, you're not going to be able to do it for 500. But yeah, in my head, I was like, that's actually not the worst. Whereas ones like Brazil, for example, when I'm just going for that one race, I can't remember what the cost was, but I think it was roughly like £700 for them flights. So that's where the chunks really start to come out, because I can't split that across two races, for example. So the long haul flights are a bit of a killer on the budget, that's for sure. And the American ticket prices as well. So Vegas, when I last checked, Vegas general admission was $700. It's the only race ticket I haven't bought yet. I've got all of the rest sorted. And I'm just waiting, hoping that like near the time they'll do a sale, because I think last year they did, to try and get some more of the tickets sold, because they hadn't sold out. So hoping they do the same this year, because like $700 for general admission is just, that's just gonna be a shocker. So, and I can't imagine general admission is that good at Vegas. So,
and you could always just wait for someone who's like something comes up and they're like desperately trying to sell them on for a little bit of cash, I'm guessing. Have you done it? Have you bought any like just secondhand tickets, whatever they are?
I had to get Australia through Viagogo, which is a bit risky, to be honest, because you never know if you're actually going to get it, especially when you're flying to Australia. But because the Australian one just sold out so quick. I think they went on sale at 3 a.m. UK time. So like, I woke up at 5 a.m., I think, and they'd already gone. So I was like, I'll have to get it resale. But all of the others I've got through either the circuit themselves or the F1 website or through P1 Travel, who are an official reseller. So they've been my like three go-to options. And then, Australia was a bit of a, a bit of a deviation from that. But I had to do it, unfortunately, for that one.
Could always just wait for Aston Martin. Say, look, lads.
Yeah.
if you need anyone. So, obviously, touching on earlier on, you're a Ferrari fan. Grew up watching Michael Schumacher. What was there a specific track you were really excited to go to this year? Because I believe you've been to tracks before this anyway, haven't you? You've been to certain circuits anyway.
Yeah. But
was there one specific track you were kind of like, I cannot wait to go to?
To be honest, it was Suzuka, and it like lived up to expectation. Like you said, I've been to a few before. So 23, I went to Singapore. 22, I've been to Monza. And then before that, Spa and Silverstone. So I've been to four different tracks before this year. Suzuka was always like right up on my bucket list. I'd previously been to Japan like 7 or 8 years ago, just for a short trip. And I loved it. So I think that's part of the reason as well, just wanting to go back to Japan. Suzuka was an awesome experience. But in terms of European ones, it's funny, because like I said Japan and Austria were like the two I recommend, but like I was really looking forward to Austria as well, mainly because of the reasons I said. Like, I'd heard people saying about the great views and the great general admission. That turned out to be exactly the case. In terms of ones that are left, probably Austin I'm looking forward to most. because I actually really like that track. I think it's by far the best American race. And then also my parents are going to be joining me for that race. So my mum's never been to a race before. It'll be her first race. And that'll just be really cool to share that weekend with
them. Does that mean you can save some budget as well, because they'll pay for food and stuff?
Not so much on the food, but like for accommodation, for example, we'll split it three ways. So whatever accommodation we end up getting, it'll be a third of the actual cost of if I was there on my own. So that does help.
It's funny, isn't it? Because Luke and I, we've discussed in the past, we would like to go to more races. I've been to Silverstone, Spa and that. But there's always that element of what is more enjoyable, sitting at home watching it on TV because you get the whole aspect, you know, the whole view of it, or you're at the track. When I was at Spa, it was great because I found a space, general admissions, where I had a screen in front of me, so it worked brilliantly. But I think if I didn't have a screen near me, I think I would have really struggled. Whereas when you're at home, you get all the angles, you get all the updates really quick. Have you, obviously, what you've done so far, has that changed your mind? Are you now more like, no, live sport, you know, rather go to the track every week? Or do you sometimes go, do you know what, I kind of wish I was at home because I would have got the whole full experience?
I'll be honest, I never think the latter, but what it has taught me is that I always want to have a screen when I'm at a race. So like, honestly, it's just impossible. Like you said, it's just impossible to know what's going on when you don't have a screen. So wherever I'm in general admission, I always now try and get a spot where I can at least see a bit of a screen, so I at least have an idea of what's going on. Because without it, like you say, it's impossible. Like sometimes you'll have the commentary over the speakers, which helps. But in Hungary, there's some amazing spots in the sort of middle to last sector where they're sort of curving through all of the sweeping turns. And all of them spots are general admission, and there's some like great views of the track, but there's basically no screens there. Which I think is a real shame, because behind the other side of the track, there's just trees and stuff. So I'm sure they could put in some more screens in them areas. Whether they don't, because they want you to buy grandstands, I don't know. But I think it's a real shame, because like some of them spots are amazing, but I just didn't want to go to them for the majority of the race, because like there's no screen. So we actually went there. I was with my sister. We went there for a part of the race, but then like it was the one part where Leclerc was leading sort of midway through. And obviously I'm being a Leclerc fan, I was really rooting for him to win. And we got down to this area, and then my sister's friend goes, "Oh, Oscar's in front of Leclerc." I'm like, "What?" Didn't even know that happened. So then they come around next lap, I see him in front, I'm like, "Oh my god." And it's because like we completely missed it, because there was no speakers on in Hungary and there was no screen where we were standing. So then after that we went elsewhere for a screen again. So that's the one piece of advice I'd probably give to people, is that like I personally would always find somewhere with a screen.
I think this is actually an interesting... I'm glad you brought up that you were a Charles Leclerc fan. Mm-hmm. I've got to ask, why not Lewis?
The thing is, it's always been Ferrari for me. So then when Charles became, I guess, like the Ferrari golden boy when he joined in 2019, he then became my favourite based on that. There was a brief period for 2 years where I was sort of half supporting Leclerc and half supporting Mick, because obviously Michael Schumacher being my hero, like having Mick in the sport was pretty awesome. So it was sort of like a half and half at that point. But then ever since then, it's been Leclerc again. And I'm not like lover or a hater of Hamilton. I'm sort of a bit indifferent. And I was pretty happy when he joined Ferrari, because I think that's a very cool move. Not that it's worked out that way so far, but yeah, because of that whole sort of storyline, that's why I'm more of a Leclerc fan than I am a Lewis fan.
I've got a question. Is it, you know, obviously we're Lewis fans, so we came across to Ferrari. Is this what it's like? Is it
always this painful?
Yeah, pretty much. I remember the start of 2022 when the new regs came in. It was Ferrari 1-2 in the first race. I'm thinking, oh my God, fantastic. Year of domination. And then like, Max wins it with like three or four races to spare. So every year is our year, right? And, until it's not.
What do you think is, you obviously have been following Ferrari for way longer and way closer than us. What do you think is the issue at Ferrari? Because realistically, obviously I know you had the season with Kimi Raikkonen, 2007. And then, you know, Alonso came close, I think it was 2012. Ferrari have never hit the heights that they have since the Schumacher era.
No.
What do you think has gone wrong in that period? Like, when you look at Ferrari now and you compare it to looking at them when you were growing up, what's gone wrong?
It's a great question. I know that a lot of people online often point out, I mean, as do I, like, often point out the strategy mistakes that are made and some of the stupid things that Ferrari do that end up being quite public that everyone sort of takes the mick out of. I personally don't actually think it's them things that are the issue. I think, for example, if in one of the recent years Ferrari have had the fastest car, then them issues become less of a thing because they're out front and they probably happen just as often, but I think they're less highlighted because they're winning races and they're out there competing for the championship. So I think the problem lies with the car itself and the actual engineering behind the car. It seems that recent years they've always been second best, and maybe if Red Bull weren't dominant in 2023, maybe if Red Bull didn't exist, then that would have been Ferrari's year. But I guess, you know, it's hard to pinpoint, isn't it? But I think that, yeah, it's more down to the engineering than a lot of the strategy things that come up a lot on social media. I think that they obviously play a part, but I just think that they wouldn't be highlighted as much if the car was a bit faster.
Yeah, I think when you look at Ferrari, one of the big things which we spoke about last year was their, you know, their pit stops being too slow or their mistakes that they used to make. And the thing that's been really evident, obviously, like Luke said, we're following Ferrari a bit more this year because we are Lewis fans. It just seems like they don't really want to listen to the drivers. And there's a divide between the communication between, for example, you look at Hungary, for example, Charles Leclerc was furious throughout. Livid, you know, they weren't listening to him. He was coming over the radio, really slating the team. Then afterwards they were like, well, you had an issue with your chassis, and he was a bit like, okay, I understand. But the lack of communication throughout that just led Charles to get so angry and so vocal, and it kind of sometimes feels like, you know, you look at some teams, you look at, for example, Red Bull, they're really good and kind of going, this is our issue, this is what, and you hear that communication throughout the race. It just seems a real lack of communication between the drivers and the team during the race, which then, you know, Charles Leclerc just loses his head.
Is this chassis thing real, though?
That's what I was thinking. Is it?
When did it happen? Why? When did he pick up that? Why was he able for, like, pretty much the first 60% of the race to be able to lead comfortably, or at least have, you know, net P1? When did this occur? Because I didn't see anything happen to his car.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, to be honest. Maybe it is more the George Russell thing of tyre pressures. I don't necessarily believe everything that's been said by Ferrari on that. But I think like, it's a very good point you make, Matt. Like, I think that's actually very valid. Like, a lot more teams, or a lot of the other top teams, seem to be more clinical in them decisions. I'm sure that plays a part. But yeah, I still go back to the underlying thing of just the car not being what's there to win races or championships at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I obviously want Ferrari to succeed. You know, it'd be great to see Lewis win in red, and I know he has done in the sprint race. but also Charles Leclerc, you know, Luke's a Leclerc fan, and he's always said that actually if Lewis retired, he's probably someone who he would follow. But there is a point, isn't there, that actually Ferrari can't just keep using their name because they're Ferrari by enticing. They need success. They need championships. And we spoke about when Christian Horner got sacked from, or, you know, he left Red Bull. Having a team principal like him, would he be someone who would be good to go in and actually change that team around? You know, with Fred Vasseur getting a new 2-year contract, which I still personally don't quite understand, because I haven't seen enough from him to go, yeah, you deserve a 2-year contract. Is it just the leadership? Is there just a lack of, I don't know. Like I said, last one you've won was 2007, right? Mm. That's what, 18 years ago. A team like Ferrari should not be going this long without a title.
Yes, man. So when you say that 18 years ago, it doesn't really feel like it. You said 2007, you're like, oh, that's so long ago now.
But how, you know, and you touched on it earlier, they've always been second best recently. You know, finishing P2, you know, like this year, they're like, oh, if we finish P2, yeah, we'll be quite, you know, that's successful. No, it's not. For a team like Ferrari, who have two quality drivers there, you should be expecting more. That Tifosi, right, have been very patient, and I feel very sorry for them that they've had to go through this for the last 18 years, because it must be really painful turning up to races and then just seeing them just do nothing. But I don't know where Ferrari turned from here, but they need to change things quick, because eventually the name won't be enough to entice big drivers.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I think next year's pivotal with the new regs. And if Ferrari don't pull out a decent car next year, I could quite easily see Leclerc moving on after next year. Because like, it's sort of like, how long do you give them if you're Charles Leclerc? And like, if I was him, if the car's not up to scratch in 26, the likelihood is it wouldn't be championship winning worthy in 27 or onwards anyway. Like, is that the point at which you say, right, let's cut my losses and try and win a championship elsewhere? I think it could be. So,
well, Charles Leclerc is a very talented driver.
Yeah, Charles has to leave after 2026 if they don't produce him a car. And I'm not being funny, like Lewis would probably follow as well. And then you look at Ferrari and you think, actually, you're in the shit here. Because who are they going to get? I know they still retain that pull power with their name, because driving for Ferrari is probably 99% of F1 drivers' dreams. But I still think you can't base that all on nostalgia. Like, that is dreamy if you're in the same position as Michael Schumacher, where you've got a car that is so good, and that's not taking anything away from Schumacher, because he took that car to heights that people never expected. But when the team is operating like that, they become so much more appealing. Whereas now you look at them, you know, like we said, Ferrari tend to be the laughing stock of F1, and that's not right. We shouldn't be able to laugh at a team like Ferrari, but we seem to be able to find ways to laugh at them in different ways every single weekend.
Yeah,
and
that's very
if
true.
They lose Lewis and Charles, in particular Charles, because obviously Charles is Ferrari golden boy, he's still such a young man, he's got all the potential. If he goes, I actually don't know where they go from there.
Yeah, I think you're spot on as well, because like, if they both left, I think, like you say, they can pull other drivers in just because of them being Ferrari, but I don't think they'll be able to pull any drivers that are the level of Leclerc, Hamilton, Verstappen. I think they would have drivers that are probably a step down from that point, maybe until they recover again and rise back up to where they should be, but like whenever that will eventually happen. Yeah, I think you're spot on. Hopefully all this talk is just is going to be a wash when 26 comes round and Ferrari have the dominant car and Leclerc wins the championship with five races to go. So
I am praying for that, other than I want it to be Lewis.
You want it to be Lewis, yeah, fair. Yeah.
Obviously, on the podcast, we do a few little quizzes and a few little things, questions. And as you're on here, I thought I'd get you and Luke to work together to try and work out this one. So we're looking at last race finished more than one lap behind the winner. So as you know, in Hungary, 10 drivers got lapped in that race. There's been another, what is it, 6 drivers have been lapped this year. There is only 4 drivers who have not been lapped this year. Do you know who they are and when they were last lapped?
Whew, that is a question. Okay.
I definitely know the Max Verstappen fact behind this.
Yeah.
Because it is absolutely insane.
What is it?
So Max Verstappen has not been lapped since, I can't remember exactly the race, but it's since 2017, is it not?
Italy, 2017.
That's wild.
Mental
is absolutely crazy when you think, number one, how old was Max in 2017? Maybe like 18, 19.
Yeah,
that is nuts.
He was also driving in a Red Bull that was not, you know, the Red Bull that we see today or we have seen in this era, and to find himself not lapped at all, that means nothing's even really gone wrong for him in that period of time. It's such an unbelievable stat, and it it pains me to speak so highly of Max Verstappen every week, but he's so good.
He's unreal, isn't he? It's like, it's a bit of a joke.
Who's the other three drivers?
The others, though.
Piastri's got to be one this year, but I don't know when he'd last be lapped, because he's on that streak at the moment, isn't he? Of, what is it, like 40-odd races in the points now?
Piastri, you're right. It was Brazil 2023.
Okay.
Piastri got lapped, Brazil 23.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. But what you were saying about Piastri joining, he's just joined Lewis and Max, is it, for like longest consecutive point scoring?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's, yeah, is he like something like 7 or 8 behind Lewis, I think, now? Who's top, I think.
Yeah.
So he could quite easily actually top it, which is pretty mad, isn't it?
It's pretty insane, his consistency since he's come in.
Yeah, particularly after Australia drivers as well. So the other two drivers, I'd say Lando. Yeah.
Lando was Monaco 2023. Yep. One more driver.
Actually, George?
George, yeah, I'd say George.
No, George was lapped this year in Monaco.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I think Leclerc was he lapped in Silverstone? He had a shocker in Silverstone, so I think he probably was.
Leclerc was lapped Silverstone 2024.
Oh, 2024, he wasn't lapped this year.
No, so there you go. There are your four drivers. Everyone else has been lapped this year. Both Mercedes, Lewis Hamilton, Tsunoda, doesn't surprise you, Tsunoda. Tsunoda just, like, that guy is just on his own. But yeah, interesting from that point of view. Let's just quickly touch on McLaren, because Luke and I go back and forth. Last year, I said Oscar Piastri is my favourite to win the world title this year. Luke laughed at me. There's a clip, which I found only the other day, Luke, actually, where you laughed at me and said, it's never happening. So looking at the most points in 2025, so rounds 1 to 7.
Wait, whoa. Let's not just say something. There's got to be some context around that. I think, what year were we in when I said this, firstly?
2025?
No, I never said it in 2025. I think we spoke about Oscar Piastri in 2023, which is, yeah, you're right, 2 years ago. And you said, you came up with a very bold claim, which, just because it's come true or is likely to come true 2 years later, does not mean that you knew it was going to happen. You threw out this wild, ambitious claim that you've been so lucky that somehow is going to come true, and it makes me look stupid when you were just throwing stuff out there to fucking clickbait. I knew it at the time. You said that Oscar Piastri was going to win a world championship before Lando Norris. Now, anyone who said that at the time that you said that was crackers. There was no knowledge behind that. You were just saying it because you don't like Lando.
I don't know, Luke. Sounds like you're in the mud here, Luke.
It absolutely triggers me, this.
It's not that I don't like Lando. I don't mind Lando. I just feel Oscar Piastri is an all-round better driver. And that's why I said it. I said it then, and I still stick with it now.
No. That's fine to say now, because there's evidence to back that up. In 2023, there was nothing to suggest that Oscar Piastri was a better driver than Lando Norris. Had you been to watch him at Alpine reserve test days or something?
I've watched all of his go-karting, his F2 days. I've watched all of his data.
It was a wild claim that you made that has fortuitously come true.
Okay. So let's move on, because you're getting a bit bitter here, right? Just the fact that I'm close to being right here. So I want to ask Brandon, so you've gone to the races. Who is your favourite for the world title this year? Because when you break this down from rounds 1 to 7, Oscar Piastri scored 146 points, Lando Norris 133. From round 8 to 14, Lando Norris has scored 142 points, Piastri 138. So just edging, it's very close between both of them. But who's your favourite for the World Championship this year?
If I had to put money down on it, I would go with Oscar Piastri. I think that it is super close, but I would say that, I think luck's like a bit too far. I wouldn't say it's been lucky for Lando, but I think Lando's had a few more things go in his favour throughout some of the races. And there's no doubt some races he has been quicker, but I think like across the season, consistency wise and pace wise, I'd say that Piastri has been more impressive to me. And if that's to continue, then I'd put my money there. But like, I honestly think they're so close. It could go either way, but yeah, if I'm putting my money on something, then Oscar.
I think that's it with Oscar is, well, I've come out here and said most weeks that I still think if you took away all the pressure and everything, there was nothing riding on these races, I firmly believe that on pure pace, Lando Norris is a quicker driver, but I don't believe he has the same racing instinct that Oscar Piastri has. He doesn't have the temperament that is required to win a world championship that Oscar does. And I think he doesn't have that world championship consistency that you need on track. You know, you look at Max in that era of domination, which hopefully we're leaving now. And you know, Lewis or Michael Schumacher, Sebastian Vettel, these sort of every week turning up and being absolutely relentlessly consistent. And that's just not what you see in Lando Norris.
No.
Yeah, I'd agree. No. Yeah.
But I know you say about me just like plucking something in the thin air by going, yes, I've picked this person. But I did say even Piastri last year, I think it was, when he won the sprint race in Bahrain, I think it was, ahead of Max Verstappen. I said he just looks like an all-round, more composed driver. And you even saw that in his rookie year as well. He was a more composed driver. So I think he's done a phenomenal job.
Every time you reference this statement that you made, it makes me want Lando Norris to win the championship a little bit more.
Can I just finish in on Oscar Piastri? And I'll probably get a bit of stick for this, but I think what will make it most... If Oscar Piastri goes on and wins a world championship this year, not only is it it's impressive, it's in his third season, okay? He's beaten Lando Norris, he's beaten the likes of Max Verstappen, winning his first championship and all of that. But I think what's most impressive is that he's winning it against, in theory, his team principal and Zak Brown and that, who don't really want him to win, if that makes sense, because their money, they want Lando to win. They've invested heavily in Lando. So if Oscar Piastri beats Lando Norris this year, that is not a great look for someone like Zak Brown, who has invested so much time in Lando and has put him on this pedestal to say that he is going to be his favourite to win a world championship. Is that a wrong thing to say?
I wouldn't say I necessarily agree with it. What I do think is, or what I am enjoying with the McLaren battle, is that it seems as though they're almost working as two different teams now, because they're so far clear and they're going to win the constructors and basically nailed on. I like the fact that they're doing opposing strategies and that they're actually working against each other to try and one-up each other. I think that makes it so much more interesting for us. And I personally, if Oscar were to go on to win it and Lando would be second, like, I don't really see that as a damaging thing for Zak Brown or for McLaren. I'd think that they've already sort of got their flowers this year with how good their car is, and whatever the outcome, like, I just see it as positive for that team.
Yeah, I don't think McLaren are going to be like, fuck, I can't believe it. Why has he won and not him? Like, I think that ultimately they're going to get to the end of the season, look back and be like, okay, wow, we absolutely dominated. We had two drivers going for a world championship with absolutely no competition for the other teams. We wiped the floor with them in the constructors. But what I do find very funny is that I personally feel like they don't even try to hide it. They definitely look way more excited when Lando wins a race compared to when Oscar wins a race. I'm not sure what that is, whether that's like on purpose, but it does always look like such a big celebration when it's Lando. And then like Oscar wins and Zak comes on Sky and he looks a little bit more subdued and just like, yeah, that's cool. Lando wins. Oh my God, he's over the moon. He's like popping champagne.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know what that is.
Maybe that's one of the insights from like being able to see all the coverage on TV. I don't really get that across at the tracks. I do watch the race highlights often when I get back from races, but I only watch like the 7 or 8 minute clips that are on YouTube. So I don't necessarily see all of that like post-race excitement or everything that goes on. So yeah, I mean, maybe you're right. From like my point of view, again, I don't really see that side of it, but that could just be like me missing that part of the coverage.
You do see it, and I think it's an interesting one because McLaren have got two very talented drivers there, and Oscar Piastri. Taking Oscar Piastri from the likes of Alpine was a great move for McLaren, and you know, Lando Norris, both phenomenal drivers. But my personal opinion is that actually, I do think for the likes of Zak Brown, if Lando Norris does not win the championship this year, that is a very disappointing year for someone like Zak Brown, who has invested so much time in Lando Norris. Don't get me wrong, I think it's overall, it's brilliant. Constructors, drivers' championship.
It's disappointing, though. I think he might have an element inside him where he's a little bit disappointed that it wasn't Lando that won.
But that's what I mean.
It was Oscar.
That's what I mean, yeah. He's not going to end the season and be like,
fuck, we failed.
No, I don't think they'd say they would think that they failed. I think it's just more the fact that they think it should have been, you know, oh, I wish it was Lando.
But it's like, do you think the same would exist for Ferrari, Brandon? Do you think if 2026 comes, Ferrari have a car that is capable of world domination, and Lewis Hamilton goes on to win the championship, is there going to be an element within the Ferrari team where they're like, oh, that should have been Charles?
I think if it was any other driver other than Lewis Hamilton, then it would be yes. But the fact that it's Lewis Hamilton and it would be him going on to his eighth in a Ferrari, I can't see them feeling that about Leclerc, to be honest. Any other driver, even if it was Verstappen in there with Leclerc and Leclerc won it, and Verstappen won it, I think they'd think that. But with Lewis, I can't see it, just for the history point of it. That's the only reason.
Yeah. No, I get that. How would you feel if that happened?
I'm not going to lie, I'd be slightly disappointed. I'd be happy that Ferrari have finally got back to the top. But being a Leclerc fan, I'd be a bit disappointed. But I'll be honest, like the more of the reason, and you're both probably not going to like this because like 2021, very controversial, but is that if Lewis wins an eighth title, it means that Schumacher's record is now, he's not the tide leader. So like that part of me is like, I want Schumacher to stay as the tide leader.
Hang on, this is going to change everything. This is going to change whether this podcast goes out or not. So you're telling me in 2021 you were a Max Verstappen fan?
I've never been a Max Verstappen fan, but I wanted him to win the championship. Yes.
Oh God. Okay. Right.
I knew that one would go down well.
Turn off the cameras.
I knew that one would go down well.
That's tough to hear. That is really tough to hear. So when it concluded the way that it concluded, were you there like, come on, that's exactly what we wanted? Or were you like, hang on, he's been robbed?
You're going to be even more fuming, but I was celebrating.
No.
I was. I mean, I'm not going to disagree that like the way it happened was very bad. And like how I view it is that Lewis Hamilton fully deserved that Grand Prix win. But I think over the course of the season that Verstappen deserved the championship, in my view. On the day, I'll be honest with you, I was celebrating. And like that race was, I mean, it was something else. I don't think we'll ever see anything like it again. But
Luke, sorry,
Could you imagine if you had done this challenge in 2021?
That would have been like peak life. That would have been unreal.
Yeah, best year of your life. I mean, I'm literally sure it is anyway, but oh my, if you had the racing to back that up as well, that would have been insane.
100%, 100%. Yeah.
Just quickly on Mercedes. This is a mad stat, okay? So the NoSciPods W13 is still on pace to be Mercedes' most successful car in podiums and points per Grand Prix of this era.
Really?
Which is
so
crazy.
The W13 averaged 23.41 points per Grand Prix, and they had 17 podiums. The W14 only had 8 podiums. The W15, 9 podiums. And the W16 have currently got 7 podiums. So the NoSciPod era, which everyone thought was a genius, which actually turned out to be a flop, is actually going to be the most successful Mercedes car in this era.
Is that just a sign of the other teams and the progress made? Because I feel like 2022 was still a bit of an experimental year where certain teams would be good at some tracks and not others, and it was a bit more unpredictable. Whereas I guess now that McLaren have established like quite a dominant car, and prior to that it was Red Bull with a dominant car, does that just naturally make it harder to get them podiums for the other cars? Maybe that plays a part in it.
Yeah, I don't know. Mercedes have been... Mercedes were a really difficult team to follow during that period, by the way. If you're a Mercedes fan, off the back of 2021, coming into 2022, and it was tough because I look back at sort of our time of the ground effect era, supporting Lewis in the Mercedes, and I think last season or 2023 was actually the best, because at least we had race wins. You know, it made such a difference, but it goes to show that once you get on, like, podiums don't actually mean a lot. All I think back to is when they won the races. So I would look at those seasons and say, well, they must be better. Because that 2022 was such a depressing year as a Mercedes fan. Probably for most other fans, other than maybe Ferrari, you had a great half a year, and then it kind of went a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
But I feel like Mercedes never... I think because they kind of stuck with the concept for a little bit too long, they then got too far in, they changed it. They've never really found their feet in this era of cars.
Mm.
And I think that is really just showing this season.
Yeah, I mean... A lot of talk is 2026, Mercedes have the best setup for 2026. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. But I still find it mad that that's on course to be the best car within this era. Talking of 2022, Brandon, you must have got a bit excited with that, because you started off very strong. Charles Leclerc was looking great. He obviously made some mistakes. I think it was France, wasn't it? He crashed. And then they did some weird strategy with Carlos Sainz. Was that the first part where you kind of thought at that start of the season, you were like, okay, we might be on here. And then obviously Max Verstappen just came along and just ruined all of that for you. And, you know, as after what you've just said to us, I'm kind of glad it happened, because you witnessed what we went through in 2021.
Very fair. I'll take that. but yeah, you're spot on. I actually thought that, I think it was it the first like four or five races, it was like alternating wins between Leclerc and Verstappen, or it was something along those lines, I can't remember exactly. But when they were going sort of battling away, and I think it was it Saudi as well, they're having quite a good battle, I thought that we were in for like another 2021, but this time Ferrari were in the mix. And then, yeah, the season just didn't pan out like that in the end, did it, unfortunately, which is a shame. But hey, next year's our year, right? So
this is... This could get controversial again, because I remember, and I'm not sure if I feel the same now, but specifically watching in 2022, when we got kind of halfway through the season, for Leclerc, I mean, and Carlos Sainz, to be fair, there was a few fatal errors in that season. And I came out and said, I don't believe Charles Leclerc has what it takes to be a world champion, because he had the car for a good part of that season. But there were times where he was putting it in the wall. And, you know, he was ruining his own race. And when you have a competitor such as Max Verstappen, you know, it's fine. If he was in an era where Red Bull had, at the time, Sergio Perez and, I don't know, let's say they had another Yuki Tsunoda in the car, you know, maybe Charles would have been a lot more comfortable in that situation. But when you've got to go head-to-head with someone as ruthless as Max Verstappen, and you're not coming out the other side in some of the races which you should be winning, mm-hmm. I felt like Charles was destined to never win a championship. And it wasn't that I thought he wasn't quick enough. I just felt maybe it's a little bit similar to that Lando syndrome, where they've got the pace, but are they able to extract it consistently enough throughout a season to win a championship? What are your thoughts there now you look kind of 3 years down the line? If Charles was in the McLaren, you know, is he going head-to-head with Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris?
I think so. I think that there's definitely a bit more maturity there now. And I do sort of agree. I remember in 2022 having similar feelings of like, is Charles Leclerc actually the level at which you'd expect someone to go on to win a championship. And I feel like the last few years have sort of backed that theory up. I feel like there's been less mistakes and maybe less on the line because Ferrari haven't been as competitive as they have been in 2022 since then. So maybe it's like harder to actually judge because if they were out front, maybe that's what causes the mistakes. Maybe that's what causes the pressure that then means like he spins out or makes an error that costs him a win. So I guess it's a bit harder to judge, but like based on his recent performances, I would say that he's right up there, like top five, maybe top three drivers on the grid, in my opinion, still. And if you're in that top five bracket, I think any of them in the right car could go on to win it.
Okay, so I have a good one for you.
Okay.
When you spoke about Oscar versus Lando, mm-hmm. you said if I had to put my money on it, I would put it on Oscar.
Yeah.
We head into 2026. Ferrari have the best car by a long way. You've got your 20 grand budget, right? For whatever reason, you have to bet it on Lewis Hamilton or Charles Leclerc to win the world championship.
Yeah.
Putting your money where your mouth is, taking emotion off the line because you have to just, you know, you need this money.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's it going on?
In 2026, it would be going on Charles Leclerc. But if it was Leclerc versus 2021 Hamilton, it would be going on Lewis Hamilton. I think that since then, like, I feel like age has got a player factor. And Hamilton, although he's still one of the best drivers on the grid, I think he's not as quick as he was in that 2021 season or sort of the seasons before it. So if you're putting him, the sort of level of that, then Leclerc's definitely not there. And I would put my money with Lewis. But if it's just purely next year and that's what happens, then 100% on Leclerc. I think actually, like, not to do a disservice to Lewis, but I think that it wouldn't be a tight battle like it has been with the McLarens this year. I think that Leclerc would pull a slight gap, personally.
I wouldn't worry about doing a disservice. You absolutely rinsed him early on when you said you favoured Max Verstappen in 2021.
This is making me seem like a Hamilton hater. I'm honestly not. It's just like...
Finally.
It's just the way it's panned out.
things are going to change. People think I'm a Lando hater on this podcast. So now we've finally got someone on here who actually goes a Lewis hater. So finally, a bit of pressure off me for a week. But no, Charles has done a great job. He really has. And he's... I think what's interesting is... I've got a question for you. The last couple of years, Carlos Sainz in 2023, 2024, Carlos Sainz started to get more comfortable, did some great wins. You look at last year after he had his appendix, he came back and removed and he came back and won in Australia. And he really went head to head with Charles Leclerc. With Charles Leclerc, he's only had 8 race wins. At this point in time, does that really show... Is that a real true reflection of what he's achieved so far in the sport, if that makes sense?
I think it's a true reflection of what he's achieved. I don't think it's a true reflection of his pace. I actually saw a few days ago that now Norris has more wins than him. I think Piastri's level, or maybe one more, I can't remember now. But that's like pretty crazy when you think Leclerc, it feels like Leclerc's been around for so long in that Ferrari now. And to think that like Norris and Piastri have only had a race-winning car for a year or so, have now overtaken him. Yeah, it's not great, but particularly when you look at the pole conversion as well, right? It's almost at 30 poles, I think it is now. So that's just a crazy stat. And I'd like to think, whether this is true or not, I don't know, but I'd like to think it's more Leclerc outperforming the car on a Saturday and then on Sunday, the car gets exposed. Maybe there's an element of the driver as well, but I don't know. That's what my hopeful brain thinks, is that like, he just does too well on Saturdays. He's too quick on one lap, but yeah, I don't know.
Maybe that's the consistency argument, because if we just like draw it back to the Lewis Leclerc debate in a world championship, if you asked me, you know, who I thought was a quicker driver at this point, I would probably say Charles Leclerc, because I think that's a reasonable answer, and I think there's a lot more evidence to suggest that at this point in time. I still think if they were going for a title, I'd have to back Lewis on the basis that we know he's got that in his locker, that consistency, that relentless ability to get result after result after result. And that's the only thing that I think about Charles is he's so, so quick. But can he do it over 24 races and, you know, not just on a Saturday? That pole conversion stat is one that probably keeps him up at night, I would imagine. Because I think after Hungary, was it 28 poles? I think that might have been his 28th pole. But prior to that, it was 27 poles and 8 race wins, I think it is. Which is not a great conversion stat. But what it does show is that over one lap, he is incredibly quick. So yeah. Where and why is it going wrong? That's what he needs to understand.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you're spot on. I guess, like, yeah, flipping it back on both of you as Lewis fans. So if you had the 20 grand, would you both be betting on Lewis next year if they had the dominant car?
Yeah,
can I do
stupid.
Each way?
Yeah. no, each way.
Look, I would always back Lewis, and you can call me delusional if you like, and that's fine. But I don't believe for a second that after that 21 season, where Lewis was so dominant, one of the best seasons of his career, he just all of a sudden overnight just loses it. Comes back in 2022 and just loses it. 2023 just loses it. I don't believe that. Yes, okay, age plays a factor, but I can't, you know, we saw in China in the sprint race, that was like old Lewis Hamilton. But I don't fully believe that he's just lost it. I just think that this era of cars just hasn't suited him as well as, you know, other drivers. But what's your thought, Brandon? As you know, being not a Lewis fan, but being a Leclerc fan, do you think Lewis has lost it because of age, or is there more things going on behind the scenes?
Whether it's just age or whether it's the type of car, I don't know. But I just think based on the, you know, what's going on this season, and it's hard to say, because when you have the best car and when your car is planted and when you have lots of confidence in your car, it's a very different driver to someone that maybe has to like muscle a car up there. So like Lewis having them incredible cars with Mercedes all the years, like he was absolutely unreal when he had the confidence in the car. So maybe next year, if Ferrari gave him that confidence, he would have that speed again. Whereas maybe because he doesn't have that confidence this year, that's why we're seeing such a gap between the two. So I think that's more than possible. I just hope that like this scenario comes true next year so we can actually see it. Because I think it would be an awesome spectacle to one, have Ferrari back up there fighting for a world championship, but also up there, have Lewis up there fighting for the eighth, maybe not getting it, but like, at least it would give some more excitement that we don't have currently. So
I agree. Just finishing off on the podcast. So second half of the season to go. What's your hopes for the remainder of this series? You know, I know you said at the beginning you don't really have goals for it as such, but surely at this point in time, the growth that you've had in such a short period of time, has that made you think that maybe you want to have like a milestone, maybe like 100k followers by the end of the season, or you know, what's the goals?
I still don't really have a goal in terms of like follower count or in terms of that side of the social aspect. My goal is to like also continue to improve my sort of video editing and the videos I put out there. Because I only started, like I said, at the start of the year. I've sort of learned as I've gone. So I just want to keep on sort of creating better videos. And then after that, it's more just to enjoy the year. Like one of the best things about the year has been I've gone to solo probably about half of them, and that will be the case by the end of the year. But I've sort of not, because at every single race, I've met up with people through TikTok, which has been like awesome. So I've made a bunch of new F1 friends throughout the year, hopefully more to come. So my hope is that I can continue to meet more people throughout the year, make more friends in Formula One, and just enjoy the year, because like this may never happen again. So I just want to enjoy it as much as I can and then look back with very fond memories, because like I'm always half worrying that after Abu Dhabi, I'm going to be like, what do I do now? Like, what is my life? I've got so much time, like, because this has like consumed me for a year. I'm like, life will be so different after Abu Dhabi. So I don't really want to think about it yet. I just want to enjoy it. And then when we get there, I'll figure it out.
I think ultimately you set yourself up a great platform to move into that content creator space and, you know, see what comes from it off the back of all this. You know, in a year's time, you might be the biggest F1 TikToker out there.
Maybe that'd be ridiculous. Maybe, I don't know. But I do love making the videos, so I'm definitely going to carry on making them next year. So, like I said, I've got a bunch of different ideas. So what ideas I end up doing, I don't know yet. But I would love to, yeah, continue with the content creation after the year. So I definitely will. And hopefully as many F1 races as I can get to next year. But yeah, my girlfriend has been very understanding this year. So next year I'll definitely have a normal holiday as well, where we go and sit by a pool or something. Because I think she deserves that. She's come to quite a few races and she does love F1, but she is waiting for that pool holiday, I think. So that will happen next year too.
Next to an F1 circuit.
I think you owe her that.
Yeah. Next to an F1 circuit.
Yeah, the Miami pool.
Yeah, the Miami.
Yeah, the fake marina. Yeah, ideal. I'll suggest that. Don't think she'll like it, but yeah.
No.
But that is, I think just finally, just because you've kind of gone from like working a normal, I mean, I know you still do, like a normal 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Not being in the sort of the creator space, relentless sort of putting yourself out there, allowing people to say whatever they want to you whenever they want. I'm sure you don't encounter any hate, probably. But like, how have you found that whole pressure of like, oh shit, like now I'm putting my whole life out in front of the world? That do you find it weird or?
Yeah, I do, to be honest. Like some weeks it's pretty normal, and then other weeks it does make me a bit more like anxious of what I'm putting out, you know what I mean? So like when you make something and you don't really, you know that not many people will see it, you're sort of like, oh, whatever. But now that I know that there's a following there and people are like sort of expecting these videos, I do put a bit more pressure on myself to actually, I don't know, make them good and deliver. So I definitely feel that. And like it's pretty nuts to me still that like I'll be at a race and people are just coming up to me being like, oh, you're the guy from TikTok. Or, oh, you're full-time Formula. I'm like, that's just nuts. Because like before February, I never really used to post on social media. Like my personal accounts, I didn't really post on them. So like before February, no one knew who I was. And now I've got sort of 50,000 people following me that know who I am at races, which I find crazy still. So yeah, it's very surreal, but no, I'm just very thankful for everyone like saying hi and for following the videos, because that's what's like enabled some of the cool experiences that I mentioned before, and it also just makes like, the whole year more enjoyable knowing that I'm sharing stuff that people are also enjoying. Because I've also met people that have been like, oh, I'm at my first race today because of you, I booked this race because I watched your videos. I'm like, to know that I'm having an impact on people like that is like 100% the best thing about it. It's so cool. So I appreciate that so much, I'm very grateful.
Yeah, I think
sick, mate. But well done on everything you've done, honestly. It's super impressive.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks very much, guys. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no, obviously, like I said, when I saw all your clips started when you months ago back in February and it was coming up, and I remember saying to Luke when we were filming podcasts, I was like, there's a guy who's like going to every race this year, but he's got like a 20k budget, and then all of a sudden more videos were coming out, and I think it's great. I think what you've done, it's so unique, and I think that's why so many people buy into it, which is, and you build that following because people want to see you achieve this challenge, and it's honestly great. So we wish you all the best for the second half of the season. One thing though, you have to come on back after for a final to tell us about how it all went. That's the only deal.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I'd love to do that. That'd be great. And thanks for inviting me today as well. Because like I said, I've only done like one sort of other podcast thing before this. So even stuff like this is pretty surreal for me. So thanks for inviting me on. It's been awesome.
No, it's great.
Mate, thanks for coming. We appreciate it massively.
No worries at all.
Right, guys. So go and check out Brandon. If you're watching on YouTube, all of his details will be in the link description below. If not, go on social media, type in full-time formula. Is it? Did you say full-time dot formula? Formula? It's not.
The actual name has got dots between it, but I think if you just search full-time formula,
type it in anyway.
Hopefully come up. Yeah.
But yeah, enjoy the second half of the season. We'll be back next week for a brand new podcast. And take it easy. Bye-bye.